Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Time for Tell Me Why with Graeme Finley. If you have a question for Graeme, you can send it into afternoon@newstalk.com. Today's question: why, when you watch black and white films, do you know what colours things are? Or words to that effect.
Now, the initial variants on that.
They knew, they were like me, old enough to remember watching black and white films and black and white shows on TV, that they knew exactly what the colors were, which is something, because actually it's quite difficult to figure out the exact colors in a black and white photograph or film or television program. And these are all different in actually interesting ways. Now, one group of people who are probably the best at determining what the exact colors were are people who are completely colorblind. Now,
that's
about one in a million people. Lots of, you know, about 8% of men and only 1% of women. There's so many interesting differences between men and women in terms of taste, in terms of all the senses. But only about 8% of men and 1% of women might have some degree of colorblindness, which is, you know, red-green colorblind, or just not perceiving colors quite as sharply or distinctly as, you know, perhaps I apparently do, because there are online games you can play to see how good you are at determining the hue of a particular, you know, image or something
That. Okay.
Because there are three things you see in color, or which is hue, which is the actual, you know, name of the color, the family of colors, and its intensity, its actual shade, and so forth. And that's related to the wavelength of the light. There's saturation, which is the purity of the color, how crisp and sharp it is. And brightness, which is the sort of shade or darkness of tint, you know, which, and the latter two are in black and white movies and pictures, but the former isn't. And it's not in the brains or in the eyes of totally colorblind people. Now, these people apparently become very, very good at identifying the colors in black and white films and in prints, because they've grown up having people tell them, you know, what colors are go with various things, you know, what the relationship between the various colors are. And they've been able to sort of construct, because they have to, if color is important to, you know, getting around the world in some way, a pretty good eye for just using, you know, the black and white aspects of an image, what the actual original color must have been.
Yeah. Right?
Now, there are lots of barriers to this. So anyway, but there are relatively few of these people. And that's why color is absolutely fascinating. I mean, there's so many fun things you can do with color. Like I said, there's a BBC television experiment where they tire out, they've got a really wild looking picture of a color formation of a black and white picture of a castle, where it's, you stare at it for something like 30 seconds, 60 seconds, and it's got totally bizarre colors, right? And it tires out all the rods and cones in your eye, which to look at those colors. And so when you look at the black and white version of the picture, suddenly it colorizes instantly, because you're all the rods and cones, which bring in all the other wavelengths of light, which you know, were not being used, colorized the picture perfectly. You can go online and find a BBC color experiment. But anyway, that's because color is constructed by our eyes. There's no red in, you know, in the red of this incredibly red News Talk studio. Right? It's just that for reasons you've chosen, you want to bombard.
Somebody got a cheap job lot of red paint.
You want to bombard our eyes with, you know, the red frequency of light, which is, you know, bounced off whatever the, you know, you put on these walls here and stuff like that. So, you know, it's to a large extent constructed, and a lot of the tricks which we play on our brains and you know, evolving color and other things involve messing with the way that the mind constructs it. On the other hand, the actual, you know, wavelength of the light is an objective sort of fact. And so you can say, you know, this, you know, studio is objectively red, right, in that it reflects red wavelength light. Now, all of this has been used in various coloring and, you know, black and white images for a very, very long time. You know, we you know, it was James Clerk Maxwell in the 19th century who took Newton's insight. Newton was disgustingly brilliant, that all of this stuff was happening, that light was, could be broken up into to seven sort of different colors, you know, the visible spectrum, and that for humans, that's a whole nother question. you know, he had a long time trying to convince people of this. James Clerk Maxwell actually came down to the mathematical equations, among others, also a brilliant scientist, about how you mix and put together all the colors and can do so from three primary colors. And so he was able to create a color image in the mid-19th century simply by projecting three different images onto a screen at the same time. The three different images were sensitive to different ones of the primary colors, blue, yellow, and red. So color images have been with us for a very, very long time, as have color movies. They've just been really, really difficult to produce.
Expensive.
Expensive. And so a black and white photograph can use one emulsion, right, which is just sensitive to light, right? Whereas a color one needs to be sensitive to at least two and better three colors of light and or wavelengths of light. And so is a much more complex sort of object. Mm. So that's why I was watching Leave It to Beaver in black and white well into my teens, which just dates me, I suppose, at a certain point. But there are various ways in which they did use color. So for example, for a night scene, they might dye the color, the whole actual print purple for that part of the movie. Mm. So it would have a richer sort of darker sense, and you'd know that you weren't just in a badly lit indoor daytime room and things like that. They also colorized by hand, you know, films and so forth, but that was rather time consuming. And then with the dawn of computers, amazing things have been able to be done with colorization, largely by taking a film print, which actually has a picture, as you all know, probably, of actual images and running it, turning it into a digitized print and then having the computer colored in.
Yeah.
And there are huge controversies back in the 80s and the early 90s over whether they should colorize Citizen Kane.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Or It's a Wonderful Life. Mm. And people turned out to be really, really passionate about this. Right? Mm. The director, John Huston, actually his daughter, Angelica Huston, fought to keep his films from being colorized because Huston was dead set against it. The original colors, you know, can be got at, but not with a perfect sort of precision, partly because of treatments like this, partly because, you know, you have to look at the light. So, for example, if you shoot at dusk or something like that, if the shadows are long, then there's going to be a much more orangey golden light and color in the photograph or in the film than if you shoot it in cloudy weather, in which case everything's going to be sort of washed out.
Yeah.
And then the process can also really trick you in terms of what the original colors were. And so, for example, there's a reason why dark rooms have red lights in them, is that most film paper in the course of back when people developed film, right? I'm talking basically from another century.
Yes. You are literally talking from another century.
And it's even the 19th century at this point. Most of the film paper was sensitive to blue and yellow light, and not red light. So you could develop pictures in a red light confident that you were going to just get a blank photo, you know, every single time. But that meant that sort of Caucasian people and Asian people whose principal skin hues are, you know, pinkish, right, or amber in the case of Asian people, were really, really washed out by the traditional black and white photography. Mm. And that's why everyone seems so white, whether, you know, regardless of what they actually look like. Similarly, they had to standardize when they came down to making television shows or developing prints back when people used to do that. People used to actually go to stores and get prints developed. I know you can do this in a sort of retro.
But even there's a TV show called This Is Us, which is, it's a very schmaltzy show, but it, basically they three kids and triplets. One of them is black. I won't go into the black story. But there's a sequence set in the 70s or 80s where they're bringing the kids to get the family photographed. And the photographer basically says, well, I have to change the entire lighting rig if we're going to accommodate the African-American child you have as opposed to the white child you have, or I just kind of balance it somehow in the middle. And it's a thing I never occurred
which
to
I
me before.
Imagine made him feel really, or her, feel really great, right? Yeah. And this is one of the problems. So when they were developing pictures, Kodak and Polaroid, I mean, the most famous ones are the Kodak Shirley cards, where there was actually a woman called Shirley Page, who NPR was unable to track down for their bit on this, who would be photographed constantly in all sorts of different things with bright colors, and they would cue the development of photographs in the United States to her skin tones and the colors in that photograph. And the same thing was true in the BBC. They used, by and large, Caucasian people to tune the coloring of their television shows and things like that. In Japan, where Kodak really wanted to sell some product, they actually helped develop a Japanese version of the Shirley card, which was cued to a Japanese woman's skin color and so forth. And but of course, this does, you know, the early pictures of, say, African Americans do not do real justice to their particular skin tone. And so Kodak became aware of this and in the 1990s, in the end of the 80s, but especially the early 1990s, developed Shirley cards, which involved more than Shirley, but you know, women of various races. And in fact, these are still being used to sort of synchronize and coordinate broadcasts even now. And so, yeah, again, these processes are crucial to getting a semblance of the original color. But it also tells you a lot about how mediated it is between all of these processes and tricks just to get it to seem natural to your eye.
Yeah, but to go back to the original question, when they say they always knew what the color were, how did they always know what the color were? In the sense that, wouldn't you have to travel back in time onto the film set to see what the actual color was of that woman's dress?
That's it. And I think it probably was what it was supposed to be. So people knew that sort of Lucille Ball's hair was red. And again, this is part of the social construction of the thing. I mean, if you're watching Lucille Ball on television and I Love Lucy, you knew that she was a redhead. That was like a pretty famous thing. You would have had color photographs or colorized photographs of Lucille Ball to compare it with, right? You would have known if she was playing a candy striper, you know, in a hospital or in a candy factory or something like that, you know, it'd be red and white stripes as opposed to like puce and white stripes and so forth. You have this whole set of expectations. Some colors like pink and yellow are not going to be dark in a black and white picture and so forth. But again, often people were quite surprised I'm using I Love Lucy as an example. When they colorized some I Love Lucy episodes, people were shocked that certain of the dresses were this color. And it was, you know, it was like reading, you know, having someone read a book to you or going to a movie. It's like, that's not the voice I had in my head at all.
Yes,
right? You know?
Yeah.
And so while perhaps, unless our questioner is completely colorblind, in which case you probably had as good a shot as anybody, it's more complicated than that. It's based on your expectations of the world, the whole way you've understood color. Again, something I can't go into to any great detail, but Radiolab in the United States had a whole thing on colors where they explored the idea that ancient civilizations didn't have a word for the color blue.
Hmm.
And this is because William Gladstone, the British Prime Minister, before he became Prime Minister, when at that point he'd be too busy, counted all the references to color in Homer and found no references to blue. And then other people have checked for the Japanese and all sorts of things. And the only civilization which had a word for blue, which was the Egyptians, and they were the only ones who could make blue dye.
How interesting.
And so, it's tremendously constructed. And again, the original colors could have been quite bizarre. In television, which operates on a different principle than photography and film, right? It's not a picture which has been imprinted onto a medium. It's a construction with tubes and so forth. You know, they were much worse at showing color than taking color effects than films. And so they had to, and they're very bad at doing red. And so all the makeup and rouge and everything on an actress in the early days of television were green. And then they had this incredibly bizarre sort of panda makeup to try and have women, especially as features, stick out. And the person who contributed to this and patented television makeup, which was this really strange stuff, was Max Factor.
There was
a Max Factor. And then he went improved on it with pancake makeup, which would make, you know, people look normal, both on television and off.
Well, because part of the problem is you're in a TV studio, it's really hot. The first thing you're going to do is start sweating. So then the makeup's going to come off. So they have to put layers of literally they call it anti-shine, especially if you're like me, if you're challenged on top of the head.
So Max Factor was right there at the beginning, and the rest, as they say, is history.
It's fascinating stuff. Graham, thanks a million for coming into us.
Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas